Welcome to ID the Future, a podcast about intelligent design and evolution.
This is Robert Crowther at the Center for Science and Culture, and today we're going to be speaking with someone regular ID the Future listeners are certainly familiar with, Discovery Institute fellow Jay Richards. Welcome, Jay.
Rob, great to be with you.
Jay is currently a professor in the School of Business and Economics at the Catholic University of America. He is a philosopher and an economist who has written a number of books, from his early ID work with Guillermo Gonzalez on The Privileged Planet to books on economics, including the bestseller Indivisible. He's also the editor at The Stream, which is a Christian online news magazine, and has been affiliated with Discovery Institute for a number of years as one of the leading proponents of intelligent design. And after all of that, it might surprise you to know that we're actually going to talk about something quite different today, right, Jay?
Yeah, I think different, or at least a friend told me actually over the weekend that my forthcoming book actually ties together several disparate threads. So I'll go with our comments.
Well, you've written a lot of different books on a lot of different topics, and this one is, I would say, a little bit even further afield, as it's, correct me if I'm wrong, it's kind of a diet and wellness and health book.
Yeah, it's diet, health, wellness, and also Christian spirituality, all bundled up together.
And it's called Eat, Fast, Feast, and from HarperCollins, correct?
That's right. It comes out, yeah, January 7th. So the publisher was trying to decide if they wanted it to come out in the fall or in the winter. And they knew they didn't really want it to come out right before Christmas, because I talk a lot about fasting, and a lot of people don't really want to talk about that between Christmas and New Year's.
Right. But January 7th is perfect, because what do people do in January? They make resolutions. They go on
Absolutely.
Diets. Absolutely.
Everybody's thinking, they're thinking about that. And then also, of course, for Christians, Lent starts, a little over a month later. So it seemed like the best timing.
So tell me, just in a nutshell, what is Eat, Fast, Feast really about?
It is my attempt to combine really two different interests. One is the spiritual life, and the other is wellness and fitness. I have been, anybody that knows me knows I have been into fitness and healthy living for a long time. In fact, I was a strength trainer in college. It was my job. I even put people on diet plans and healthy food plans. But this was in the late 1980s, when the conventional wisdom was that you're supposed to eat a really, really low-fat diet and a sort of high complex carb diet. And so I get a feeling of dread when I think about the fellow students that I advise that way, because I think a lot of the evidence actually points in a different direction now. But I've always been interested in that, interested in exercise and weightlifting. And a few years ago, I got really interested in fasting, initially just because it's a traditional Christian practice that's fallen on hard times. And yet I knew at first that every culture and every major religion has some kind of fasting regime, but also that if you think about the long course of human history, for most of history, people didn't have access to Wheat Thins and Frappuccinos, every hour of every day, and people didn't eat every few hours. They tended to have periods during the day when they would eat, and other times they wouldn't, and then even times during the year. Sometimes there'd be an abundance, and then other times the food would be quite scarce, and so it seemed unlikely to me that, this current way of eating is actually the type of eating that's optimal. And if you look at the statistics on obesity and type 2 diabetes and so-called diseases of civilization, I think there's evidence that we're doing something seriously wrong. So there was all that kind of bouncing around in my head for a long time. And then I noticed a few years ago that there had actually was sort of a craze, at least among the, kind of fitness types that live in places like California, for something called intermittent fasting. And I started looking into it and found there's actually a growing amount of scientific evidence for the physical benefits of fasting. So you asked for a short answer. That was a long answer. But Eat, Fast, right. Feast is really my attempt to combine both the traditional historical wisdom of fasting from the Christian tradition with all the latest evidence for the benefits of fasting physically, and to tie it all up into my own views about purpose and design in the universe.
So when you talk about fasting, I've heard recently, the last few years myself, people talking about, I don't eat after 8 o'clock at night and I don't eat before 10 a.m. in the morning. So they have this shortened window of when they eat, which is a daily kind of fasting maybe. Is that what you're talking about? Or are you talking, you know, fasting like 3 days on bread and water only, or, you know, water only, or?
Yeah, it's really all of the above. What you referred to now is, you know, this idea of basically restricting the time window when you eat during the day is now being called either time-restricted eating or intermittent fasting. And part of my book is about that, but it's actually about all of the above. And so I think what we wanted to just define the word fasting carefully. So by fasting, I mean primarily going without some amount of time without food. So in principle, even not eating at night, right? And then breaking your fast in the morning with breakfast, that's a type of fast. On the other hand, of course, a three days without any calories, so just say water or maybe coffee and tea without creamer in it, that's a more extended kind of fast. And my argument is actually what I call that we should engage in what I call fractal fasting. So fractal is a geometrical pattern that emerges when you can see these online. It's a sort of pattern, at least in two dimensions, that continues to have patterns at infinite resolution. So as you blow it up, it continues to have pattern like an infinitely fractured sort of seaside or something like that. And my argument is that, in fact, there are both spiritual and physical benefits to fasting at different timescales. So limiting the amount of time during the day when you eat, so at that time scale, fasting over a week time scale. So in my case, I fast on Wednesdays and Fridays heavily. So from maybe just one meal a day all the way up to not eating at all. And then across seasons, so the normal kind of astronomical seasons that we have four times a year. And then in a Christian tradition, we have these liturgical seasons, Lent and Advent. And notice those are both followed by major feasts. So in the Christian calendar, it's Easter and Christmas. And so I actually think there are both physical and spiritual benefits to this kind of pattern in which you're eating modestly most of the time, you're seriously fasting some of the time, and then every so often you're feasting. You're actually really enjoying yourself. And it's that pattern that we have mostly displaced. So now we just basically graze all day.
Yeah.
We eat really more than we should. We eat, I think, improperly, way too much sugar and refined carbohydrates. And then on feast days, on Thanksgiving or on Christmas, we just overeat. And the irony is, of course, we eat too much total, but also that I think we actually lose part of the meaning of what it is to feast. I can assure you that if you fast kind of intensively throughout Advent and even maybe the day before Christmas, that feast on Christmas Day is an entirely different experience than if you have been, you know, had 25 office parties between Thanksgiving and Christmas.
Well, for one thing, I would think that I don't know if it's true, but you know, you hear people say that their stomach shrinks because they haven't eaten for a long period of time. If you've been fasting for a while pretty heavily, and then you have this monstrous, huge meal on Christmas Day, it seems like that would not be very healthy necessarily either.
Well, no, but as you said, it's sort of self-limiting. I mean, that's the irony. And so we now know, for instance, that persistent calorie deprivation, which is what most people do when they go on a diet, they just try to eat, you know, say 500 fewer calories every single day. This just does not work if you're wanting long-term weight loss. What it does is that your body adjusts to that. So if you're not eating very much and your body really wants more, what it does is your metabolism slows down. And so you get cold. And then when you start eating regularly again, of course, your metabolism is slower. And so you gain all that weight back and often more. If you fast, though, periodically or intermittently, so let's say 2 days a week, you don't eat at all, but then you eat plenty the rest of the week, that has a totally different physiological effect. In fact, your body actually speeds up. It increases things like adrenaline and other energy hormones. It produces growth hormone, which preserves your lean muscle mass. And then it starts digging down into your body fat and it doesn't mess up your metabolism over time. And then interestingly, on the non-fast days, so you might go an entire day without eating. So it ends up being 36 hours because you go from dinner the night before and then you go a whole day and it's not until breakfast the next day that you eat. It's not like you eat twice the number of calories because you've missed a day.
Right.
You might eat a little bit more, but in fact, your body doesn't just keep getting hungry and hungrier. If you go several days, your stomach might actually shrink. And so it just actually ends up having a completely different physiological effect. And I think this is evidence both for the fact that this is the more natural way of eating for human beings. It matches our natural pattern. It's also because I think this is actually literally how we're designed to eat. I think that when we act this way, we are acting according to the design plan, and that when we do these other things, we're actually, you know, we can survive and live decades, maybe grazing and eating lots of sugar and refined carbohydrates, but it's really not according to the best design plan for our bodies.
Yeah, that is obviously something that you've been writing about and a proponent of for a long time with intelligent design. Mm-hmm. How does intelligent design, or just the idea of that we are designed beings, how does that tie into the book, and how do you show that through the book?
Yeah, well, I think the best way to think of it is in terms of different competing hypotheses. And so if you dig into the intermittent fasting literature, if you even dip into the so-called paleo diet literature, mm-hmm. for instance, you get just this really uncritical kind of Darwinian just so storytelling, you know? And so you can always come up with some kind of story for what Paleolithic man was doing, or what happens if, you know, natural selection had hundreds of thousands of years to work on us. And so you can always end up kind of telling a story after the fact, even if you don't actually have any evidence for it. And so in this way, I think the Darwinian mechanism just often functions as a design substitute. You look at something, an amazing human metabolism, and this human people groups can eat radically different diets across the surface of the earth. Our bodies can use sugars for fuel. It can switch and use fat for fuel according to totally different diets. It looks like an amazingly complex and intricately designed system. And then you come up with a sort of Darwinian just so story to explain it away. Well, I argue that in fact, at least at the sort of modest level, you can make a design argument for this.
Right.
There's no reason to assume the Darwinian story. Now, it doesn't follow, of course, that natural selection doesn't have a role to play. And in fact, I think if, for instance, the human race had needed to have, for all of its history, constant access to simple carbs throughout the day, we wouldn't be here for good Darwinian reasons, right? Because most people for most of history didn't have access to that, right?
Right.
But what Darwinism does is it turns a design problem, with the design problem is that you need a human body that can survive good, decent periods of time without food and can function. That's a design problem. Darwin turns it into sort of the explanation. Well, yeah, that was a problem. And so therefore, natural selection has sort of provided us with it. And I think this is, you know, it's a sort of conceptual problem. And so throughout the book, I sort of presuppose that the system is designed, but it's really not until actually chapter 26, I think, of about 30 chapters in the body's grand design, that I make the case overall for design. And in that sense, it's not design versus natural selection. It's, yes, natural selection working over time explains some things. It's just that it doesn't explain very much. And you really need to have it in a broader context of a design system for it to really be able to explain what it can explain, and then to also recognize its limits.
Yeah. And I think you've done something really helpful and smart by not starting with a big intelligent design chapter at the very beginning and championing that right away, because the book obviously is a slightly different kind of topic, mm-hmm. and it's going to interest a lot of people who may not think about Darwinian evolution at all, or intelligent design, or it's just not top of mind for them. And then you lay out this plan, and you talk about the design and purpose of the body occasionally, mm-hmm. and then you present it to them at the end. I think you might really do a service in attracting people to a different point of view very subtly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And of course, I mean, the book is lots of people. I mean, if you just look at what people are interested in, people, at least in the United States, so that most readers of this book, at least in the kind of Anglosphere, are religious in some way. They're interested in religious traditions. They're also interested in health. I mean, you know, it's kind of conventional wisdom that people buy lots of books on health and diet. And so that's mainly what the book is about. But I also have a particular perspective that I think explains all this really well. And so, but rather than, as you said, leading with that, you know, I sort of get to it inductively as a final explanation for all the stuff that people have learned if they've made it through the book.
Well, that's great. I look forward to reading the rest of the book. I've looked at part of it now, and I think that it will be helpful for lots of people, myself included, after the new year when I really need to come up with, I think you have a plan in there, don't you, for like a week by week by week plan. And so I'll have to dig into that.
I hope so. And it's, it's a 6-week plan to get people on a sort of permanent fasting lifestyle as opposed to something they just try and then give up. So I do hope you'll try it.
I will try that out. Well, thanks a lot, Jay. I appreciate your being here to talk about the book. It's Eat Fast Feast from HarperCollins. I'm sure people can order it online at Amazon.com. And I know that we're going to be writing about it at evolutionnews.org. I'm sure there will be reviews and articles there. So if people want to check it out there, they can do that as well. Thanks a lot, Jay.
My pleasure, Rob. Good to be with you.
This is Robert Crowther for ID the Future. Thank you for listening.
This program was recorded by Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. ID the Future is copyright Discovery Institute. For more information, visit intelligentdesign.org and idthefuture.com.